is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, the director of the Eurasia Project, my colleague, to comment on the news of the Ukraine conflict. The news is spectacular and surprising. U.S. President Donald Trump said he and Russian President Vladimir Putin agreed on Thursday to another summit to discuss ending the war in Ukraine, one day before the U.S. president was due to speak with Ukrainian leader Zelensky. Trump said he and Putin would soon meet in Budapest after a more than two-hour phone call Trump described as productive. The Kremlin did not immediately comment. More, we have the surprise development came as Mr. Zelensky was headed to the White House on Friday to push for more military support, including potential long-range offensive missiles, Tomahawks. Yet the positive tone following the U.S.-Russia call appeared to leave in question the possibility of such support in the near term. And Reuters goes on to remind everyone that Kyiv and Moscow have been escalating their war with massive attacks on energy infrastructure while NATO struggles to respond to a spate of Russian air incursions. The Trump-Putin meeting will follow lower-level talks between Moscow and Washington next week, Trump said. No date was provided for the leaders' meeting. Anatole, thank you. Anatole and I spoke earlier today before this meeting was announced, and we come back to speculate, along with everyone else informed, about what it could mean. It's important, though, that Anatole has just returned from Europe, traveling across Russia, the Sochi-Valdai conference, Moscow and Petersburg. We last spoke when he was in Petersburg. And the war was on everybody's mind in Russia. We know now it's on the president's mind after the Gaza conflict has quieted for the moment. Anatole, in Budapest, let's start there. Viktor Orban is a man who straddles the fence between Moscow and Brussels. The meeting has to be consequential for Orban. Is it a positive feel you have for this, or is Trump walking into a lion's cave? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, I think that perhaps this follows on very much from what I said earlier today to you about the risk that we are entering an extremely dangerous period of escalation leading to direct clashes between Russia and NATO, therefore that both leaders are extremely anxious to avoid this. Putin, has never wanted to escalate. I mean, that's been clear. He's been severely blamed in Russia by hardliners for not escalating. But he clearly doesn't want to because, well, obviously the enormous dangers involved. Trump seems to have realized that, he can't simply leave this to the Europeans, because if they do something crazy and like shooting down Russian aircraft and, direct military clashes erupt, the United States will obviously, by definition, as the leading member of NATO, be dragged in, which Trump is desperate to avoid. Now, what we don't know, but we may hope, is that as a result of, these talks between lower-level officials before the summit, there might actually be progress on, making some concrete agreements. If not a comprehensive deal, then at least certain things that would significantly reduce tension and move the process forward. And of course, Trump will have had yet another meeting with Zelensky, so he may have an idea, a better idea, of just how far the Ukrainians could move. I mean, we know that there are certain things that the Ukrainians will not do, but given that their infrastructure is suffering so badly and they are, experiencing such difficulties with recruitment, perhaps on some things they may be more flexible. Russia, on the other hand, is facing a stalemate on the ground. Also extensive damage to its oil and gas production. And, of course, the threat of the Tomahawks. So there is, you know, strong motive for both Russia and America to meet, to try to reduce tensions, at least.
And it was referring to the information that Tomahawk missiles are now in the conversation in Washington to be passed through perhaps to Germany and then on to Kyiv. However, the Tomahawk missiles are chiefly naval weapons, and to adapt them to land requires special equipment, which is available, but not in great number. The Marine Corps have given up their Tomahawk missiles, I learned. Tomahawks are cruise missiles, easily the range of Moscow and beyond. In addition, they hit what they're aiming at. They're a weapon of precision, and that would give Kyiv a skill set that it has not had to this point. Mr. Putin, I believe, has made it very clear that he would regard the Tomahawk deployment as an escalation and would respond. Do I say that correctly, Anatole? He made that clear at the Valdez conference.
Well, he did indeed. And he also pointed, of course, to the fact that it would be impossible for Ukraine to retool, arm and target these missiles without direct U.S. assistance. So you would actually have a situation in which the U.S. was guiding Tomahawk missiles onto targets in Moscow. It's pretty hard to imagine anything more provocative than that.
I also mentioned that the Russian economy, because this news is tumbling around us, we have to pick up every possible clue as to where we're going. The Russian economy is not strong right now, according to Reuters. According to Reuters, there are layoffs in industries, not just defense industry, all industries, starting now. According to Reuters, there is a hesitation in what is called military Keynesianism. Inflation continues to rise. According to Reuters, now this is within 24 hours, the scene changes. But the IMF has lowered the expectation for Russia's economy in 25, 26, and 27 going forward. According to the reporting out of Petersburg, there's been a protest in Petersburg in public by what appears to be young people from the photographs appearing in Reuters, singing songs and something about a coup or removing Putin from power, according to Reuters. All of this in the mix. And I turned to Anatole for the conversations he had while in Russia. Anatole, is there a way to characterize the mood of the Russian public, especially the urban public, the intelligentsia, at this point? Are they also alarmed at the possibility, at the likelihood of escalation?
Well, very much so, yes. Everyone is, except, of course, for the hardliners who want it and are calling for it. There's anxiety about the economy, I don't see unemployment as a huge problem because, you know, it's actually Russia has been suffering from labor shortages as a result of the growth of military industry.
I know. I was surprised by that Reuters report of layoffs or furloughs at industries. I was surprised by it, but there it was.
Yes, but I mean, not military industries, and it wouldn't be too difficult to, you know, re-employ these people. Most of the people I talked to saw inflation as much more of a threat and therefore said that, you know, Putin would try to really hold down inflation even at the cost of strangling some businesses, because, of course, inflation really would threaten discontent in Russia. And also, there's not much point in paying huge salaries to soldiers fighting in Ukraine if those salaries are immediately eroded by inflation. But above all, there was growing, not quite despair yet, but deep, deep frustration among everybody at the fact that, on the one hand, the war on the ground is going so slowly. But on the other, that a territorial compromise still seemed out of sight. We have to see now whether this new meeting between Trump and Putin could bring a territorial compromise closer. But when I was in Russia, everyone said that Putin has to stick to his demand for the whole of the Donbass region, which Ukraine almost certainly cannot concede. Now, I suppose if people are really clever, and imaginative. And if you can, you know, as in Gaza, find neutral peacekeepers, there could be a solution in which the United Nations would take over the 30% of the Donbass, you know, not occupied by Russia. And then there would be an agreement to leave its future fate for negotiation. That would be an elegant diplomatic way out of this. Whether, of course, either Russia or Ukraine would agree to it, we don't know.
Two things. One, you said when we spoke, when you were in Petersburg, that Mr. Putin must protect his approval rating, cannot let that go down. The second thing you said within these hours, that the anxiety is not about the chanting in Petersburg Square by young students, all utopians, but the right wing will challenge his authority if he backs off. Do I say that correctly?
That's absolutely right, John, yes. I talked to some of these people and heard from others, and they are deeply disappointed at what Russia has achieved in the war. And of course, they, like everybody else, and this is a major source of weakness for Putin, are absolutely aware that terrible mistakes were made in planning and conducting the war. Mistakes which ultimately, of course, go back to Putin himself as president. Putin does not want to escalate, but everybody who I talked to said that if the West escalates in certain ways, if NATO were to shoot down Russian aircraft, if Western countries were to start seizing Russian cargoes, not in their ports or territorial waters, but on the high seas, that Putin would have to respond with military force. And then there would be military clashes and, of course, a possible spiral towards all-out war.
I'm speaking to Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We've got breaking news that the president of the United States and the president of the Russian Federation held a two-hour phone call. We have the summary from Mr. Trump that it was positive in tone. That's enough. And that there is expected to be meetings between officials on both sides next week, maybe in Moscow, maybe in a neutral site, maybe in Washington, to look to an unspecified date for the two presidents to meet at Budapest. Budapest, you will recall, is the capital of Hungary, as Viktor Orban. This is a nation that has struggled under the communist rule of the 20th century. And Viktor Orban has chosen to make it an independent thinker in the NATO and the EU, perhaps a neutral site. But we need to turn to NATO when we come back. Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. I'm John Batchelor.